What we are going to talk about is how you manage a default in the context of a JOA. And because of the recent collapses and continued depression of oil prices, and what some people would call a forced realignment in the industry, this has become, unfortunately, a very relevant topic in our experience. Now, in this talk, we're going to try and do two things, I hope successfully. A little bit of basic scene setting, just to lay out the landscape for anybody unfamiliar with default clauses in JOAs, and to remind everybody who is familiar about how they work. And then we'll also do some higher-end tactical observations as well, and share with you some of the things that we are seeing, both in dealing with defaults on the part of a non-defaulting party, and critically, how you, as a potentially defaulting party under a JOA, might choose to approach the issue. It's interesting, and it's a sign of the times, I think, that this would not have happened in a higher oil price environment, but we recently advised in the UK a mid-cap E&P company on its portfolio of joint ventures, and it said, look, there's not enough money to go around to service all of these joint ventures. Have a look at the suite of contracts that we've got, and the JOAs and the concessions, critically, and then as part of a process of rational economic portfolio management, tell me which is the best one to default on, i.e., which of these defaults is going to cause me the least amount of grief, which can I recover from the quickest, which places me in the least amount of jeopardy. Now, this is a novel discussion to have, and I asked the general counsel of this company, it's quite a thing where you will actively solicit advice on the best way to default under these contracts. You ought not to be defaulting, arguably. The answer came back, look, we have to do this. I owe this duty to my shareholders to work out which of these contracts is best to default on. So take me through the default scenario and then see how we go.